And I am going to read tradition four. So tradition four, which is what Carrie is going to be speaking about tonight. We are on the fourth tradition and the fourth concept. So tonight is the fourth tradition. Each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. With that, I give you Carrie B. from Bend, Oregon. Carrie, come on in. Good to see you tonight.
Hi guys, my name is Carrie and I'm an alcoholic. My home group is the New Horizons group in beautiful Bend, Oregon. And I am currently working steps 10, 11, and 12. I want to first, before I get onto tradition four, correct some misinformation that I shared last week. And I love, there's nothing more than when I give a talk, I love, because I get to learn when one of you guys call me and say, you know what, you're getting two stories confused, or you know what, you're getting a date confused, because then I get to learn too. And I've learned more from doing these workshops because of people who aren't too cowardice to actually call and like tell me what's up, than even workshops that I've listened to. And so someone in the room did call me last week after the meeting. And I just have to say, I was telling you guys about the cross-dresser on tradition three. The cross-dresser, who was also, you know, maybe a drug addict as well, came along 7 years after the incident. That was at Bob's, or that was at Bill Wilson's. The one that came, that this story was written about in the 12 and 12, didn't have a problem with drugs, wasn't a cross-dresser. The only problem that he had was that he was gay. I just really cannot wrap my head around how that back then was an addiction. But he calls himself a sex deviant, not Bill Wilson. So Bill Wilson is not the one who termed him a sex deviant. And I think I said sex deviant last week. That's another correction that I will make. And so I'll just read a little bit of a transcript from Bill Wilson's talk in 1968 about how this tradition came to be. At about year two, the Akron group, a poor devil, came to Dr. Bob. So it was Dr. Bob's house or clubhouse instead of the guy that I was getting it confused with that was the crossdresser. He could qualify as an alcoholic, all right. And then he said, Dr. Bob, I've got a real problem to tell you. I don't know if I could join AA because I'm a sex deviant. And that just meant back then that he was gay. Well, that had to go out to the group conscience and blah, blah, blah. And we can talk more about that next week under tradition five. But yeah, the guy that the 12 and 12 refers to was just gay. He wasn't even a cross-dresser. He wasn't a drug addict. He was just gay. And back then it was, I guess, that big of a deal. So with that clarified, and anybody who wants the rest of that transcript, please feel free to give me, hit me up and I'll email it to you. So on with tradition four, I like to read the long form. And we can talk more about all that stuff next week because that's tradition five. So I like to read the long form, which, I forgot to set my timer again. Can you give me a 5-minute warning? Because I'm just now setting my timer. So the long form of tradition four, and I was told that I got to look words up in the dictionary because I think I know what words mean, and especially like three-letter words like the and like own, but I don't. So I'm going to dissect this a little bit. Let's bring it down to like kindergarten grade level. So long form of tradition four, with respect to its own affairs. Let's stop right there. What does own mean? Well, a group can own a coffee pot, right? A group can own their format. A group script is their own. That's their own affairs. They do not own the 12 traditions. They do not own the copyright on the 12 steps. And they do not, that AA as a whole owns those things. So each group should be responsible for no other authority than its own conscience. So when a group's plans concern the welfare of neighboring groups, also those groups should be consulted, and no group, regional committee, or individual should ever take action that might greatly affect AA as a whole without conferring with the trustees at the General Service Board. On such issues, our common welfare is paramount. So a group that wants to, let's say, you know, and this, every one of these traditions supports our unity, right? So let's say we have a group that says, we don't like that God word. I'm going to take the God word out of the steps, you know? And let's, I think the steps are sexist. Why does it say he? Like, let's gender neutralize, right? So we got one group that has no God in the steps, no gender neutral, or no he or she. And then the next groups, they say, well, the only God we know of is Jesus Christ. Let's put Jesus Christ in there instead. And let's, you know, and so you can see where that would start to be a divisive real quick, right? Because the AA message is no longer the AA message. And what we don't own is the AA message. No group owns the 12 steps. They're copyright. And in fact, Appendix E in your service manual, for you super geeks like me, I'm just going to turn to Appendix E and read what that says real quick. Because pretty much, you know, every group has a right to be wrong. It's true. That's what Tradition 4 says over and over again, right? Every group has a right to be wrong. Now, it doesn't mean that they're right, but they have a right to be wrong. You know, if they want to, I don't know, record the faces of their members and put them on YouTube because they don't believe anonymity applies to them because they have the message that's going to save the world, right? Say a group thinks that they're so uber spiritual that they can help anybody with any problem. They don't have to be alcoholic. They can, you know, like say a group thinks that their group is so classy and they serve Starbucks coffee that they're going to charge $50 a month membership dues, right? Every group has a right to be wrong. Doesn't make any of those things right. All of those things are wrong. That's what inventory is about, group inventory. And when we know better, obviously the idea is we do better, hopefully. But the one thing that a group can't do, or else it needs to not be called AA, is change the wording in the steps, the traditions, or our concepts. So, however, this is on in Appendix E. However, because these steps have proven the constitute, maybe, an effective spiritual basis for life, if followed, arrest the disease of alcoholism, the General Service Board asserts the negative right of preventing, so far as it may be within its power to do so, any modification, alteration, or extension of these 12 steps, except at the instance of the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous in keeping with the charter of the General Service Conference. So what that means is if a group wants to change the 12 steps or the 12 traditions, even a word of them, then they need to send an agenda item into the General Service Conference. And if 3/4 of all of the groups, according to Hugh in the United States and Canada, according to Billy in the world, so whatever that's about, but if, as long as they have handwritten letters from 3/4 of all of the groups, then they can change it. But until then, either you use AA's 12 steps, AA's 12 traditions, or you call yourself something other than AA. I mean, it's 1 + 1 = 2. So now let's talk about autonomy and what groups can do with autonomy, which there's a lot, right? And I love autonomy because like the 12 traditions illustrated gets me so excited because I love the pictures in it. And I just love, I love everything about the 12 traditions illustrated, but you'll see these pictures of like, you know, these hippies sitting around on the floor. They're all barefooted. Like one of them's in his underwear, it looks like, geez, you know, and one girl's got a flower and I'm sure they're sharing about how the cosmos have helped them, their spirituality or whatever. And then you go next door and right next door, you get a speaker in a tie and a jacket and he's in a behind a podium in a church auditorium with 300 people, and no one group is any more AA than the other. Both of those meetings, which is awesome because there's something for everyone, right? And that is what group autonomy is. But both of those groups, both of the extremes and everything in between, we have the same message. We have one message. The only message we have is the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous outlined in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And the traditions protect that message. And that's the whole purpose of the traditions. So in the 12 traditions illustrated, it gives a couple of examples, which I love. It says any member who does any amount of traveling finds the spirit the same everywhere, right? And it gives some three members discussing the steps in a living room or 300 listening to a speaker in a church auditorium. It says that respectful silence greets the speaker sometimes, if that's what the group conscience decides, or the group conscience might decide that everybody happily shouts, "Hi, Anne," as soon as somebody says their name, right? 1 hour meeting, 90 minute meeting, speaker meeting, big book study. There's tons of stuff that fall under group autonomy. But then it says the local group is free to work out its own customs. Forward to the second edition uses the words customs and practices. Sorry, forward to the fourth edition uses the words customs and practices. We come up with our own customs and practices, not our own 12 traditions and steps. Not our own steps and traditions, our own customs and practices. So the fourth tradition, and then the next line is, as always, freedom brings responsibility, right? And the last paragraph says, in the fourth tradition, in a way, is like the fourth step. It suggests that the AA group should take honest inventory of itself, asking about each independently planned action, would this break any other tradition? So the fourth tradition is not a veto. The fourth tradition works in unity with the other traditions. Unless you're going to be a cherry picker and use these traditions as a, you know, as a veto power or something that they weren't created for. Now, I don't know how many of you have seen this happen, but I've been in business meeting after business meeting, after committee meeting, after district meeting, after area assembly. And every time two things are going to happen when somebody brings up the fourth tradition, there's going to be two things that happen automatically. Okay. The first thing that's going to happen is they're going to only quote the first half of the short form of the fourth tradition. They're going to only say, well, each group is autonomous. They're not going to go on to say, except, right? and the second thing that's going to happen is the next thing out of their mouth after they quote the first half of the short form is going to be a proposal that tramples at least one or two of the other traditions. And that is not what the fourth tradition was created for. The fourth tradition is not a veto power. It's very rare that I have ever heard when we're deciding to change from coffee to tea in my home group, when we're deciding to change from a beginner's meeting to a big book study in my home group, when we're deciding to change the format from a 1 hour format to a 90 minute format, it's very rare that I hear somebody say, well, based on the fourth tradition of autonomy, we can do this. No, because we know that we can do this. And we like to complicate stuff. That's what the fourth tradition means. It just means we can do whatever we want as far as our format is concerned, as far as our meetings are concerned, as far as our timeframes are concerned, as far as the days of the week that we meet are concerned. That's all it means. But when people start bringing up the fourth tradition, it's normally something like this that follows. Well, technically, we're not using the AA name on the flyer, so we can post the speaker's picture. Or, well, every group is autonomous, so our spirituality and the way we understand the big book is so far advanced from everyone else that our God is the biggest in any group, and we're going to go ahead and help non-alcoholic drug addicts too, because every group is autonomous, and that's what we can decide. And so those are the things that I normally hear that follow, thank you, Dee, that follow the fourth tradition, unfortunately. And it is unfortunate. I'm going to read something, I think, out of Comes of Age, because I love fourth tradition. I lost my place. I thought I had a card in here. Oh, here we go. Okay, so the fourth tradition in Comes of Age starts on page 105. Actually, it starts on page 104, but I'm not gonna read this whole thing. Okay, so many people wonder how AA can function at all under such a seemingly anarchy. Other societies have had law and force and sanction and punishment administered by authorized people. Happily for us, we found no need for human authority whatsoever. We have two authorities which are far more effective. One is benign and the other malign. There's our God, our Father, who very simply says, I'm waiting for you to do my will. The other authority is named John Barleycorn, and he says, you had better do my will. You had better do God's will, or I will kill you. And he does. He does sometimes kill. So when all the chips are down, we conform to God's will or perish. At this level, the death sentence hangs over the AA member, his group, and AA as a whole. Therefore, we have the full benefits of the murderous political dictatorships of today, but none of their liabilities. So there is authority enough, love enough, and punishment enough, all without any human being clutching the handles of power. Such is AA's backstop against disillusion and its final guarantee for survival under any condition. For us, it is do or die. But this is not the whole story. As individuals and as groups development progresses, we begin to obey the AA traditions for other reasons. We begin to obey them because we think they are right for us. We obey these spiritual principles because we think that they are good principles. Even though we still resist somewhat, then comes the final level of obedience. The best of all. We obey AA's steps and traditions because we really want them for ourselves. It's no longer a question of good or evil. We conform because we genuinely want to conform. Such is our progress of growth in unity and in function. Such is the evidence of God's grace and love among us. And I love that. I'm going to close with this. You know, let's look at inventory, because that's what this tradition is. This tradition is for the fellowship, what my fourth step is for myself, what my fourth step is for my sobriety, right? So my fourth step, I mean, I had a right to be wrong, right? Those are my rights coming into AA. And I had a lot of wrongs on my fourth step. And when I sat down and I did my fourth step with my sponsor, she didn't listen to me talk about all of my harms done and all of the wrongs that I have made. She didn't say, oh my God, get out of AA. You are way too sick for us, right? Because I had a right to be wrong. Just like we don't go and close groups down that are not conforming to these spiritual principles. They have a right to be wrong. However, group inventory, much like my fourth step inventory, is to discover these common manifestations, to discover those wrongs, right? And so I have to look at the wrong. And the other thing that my sponsor doesn't say, she doesn't say get out of AA, but she also doesn't say, you know what? You've been doing it this whole time anyways. You've been stealing and cheating and lying already, and you have a right to be wrong. No. She says, well, now that you know that there's been some wrong and some harms done, now we can make some changes. When we know better, we can do better. And that's the same with a group. That's why groups take inventory. Because once we know better, we can do better. And a group that doesn't take inventory, well, in my experience, it slowly sickens and dies, just like the alcoholic who doesn't take inventory. And so I highly recommend for anybody's group who has not taken a group inventory to grab a hold of those inventory forms that I sent to Dee. And I'm sure they're in that link that she posted. There's four of them that I really appreciate. And one of the things about group inventory is if you haven't had a group inventory, I'm not gonna lie. The first one that my group did, it was painstaking. It was lengthy. It was not fun, but it was so worth it. And just like the fourth step, after it's done, and after we can kind of, you know, do a fifth step and a sixth step and then start working on correcting stuff in 8 and 9, our group has gotten so healthy. And now, instead of doing this long, drawn out fourth step inventory, our group can do a quickie inventory. It's more like a 10th step now. How are we doing on this? Doing okay. How are we doing on this? Ah, starting to fall short there again, right? So it's like super quickie 10th step, once a year, 1 hour deal, if you keep up on the inventory. So just a little bit of hope. Thank you for having me.
Oh, thank you so much, Carrie. Yes, and Carrie referenced that link. For those of you that came a few minutes late, it's in the chat. I just put it again in there. So we're going to run into concepts now. So we're on concept 4. So we just heard from tradition 4. Concept 4 is throughout our conference structure, we ought to maintain at all responsible levels a traditional right of participation, taking care that each classification or group of our world servants shall be allowed a voting representation in reasonable proportion to the responsibility that each must discharge. And Billy Yen is going to be here from Jupiter, Florida, to be able to discuss with us on concept 4 this evening. Thank you, Billy, for being here.
Thanks, Billy Alcoholic. I loved Carrie talking about the stories early on and the bad information that gets around AA. And people hear things and they just keep repeating it. There is one story so bad in Alcoholics Anonymous that they actually had to print a warning in box 459 a few years ago. And still today, every once in a while, I'll catch an email trail or a social media post where someone says, I just heard this great tape of Bill W. talking at the Murray Hill Group the night Dr. Bob died. That tape is the greatest fraud in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's so bad that they had to publish that in box 459, that tape was an AA member who had a side hustle to do AA plays. And he did a one-man show about Bill W., and it got taped. And then what happens years later? People are posting all over the internet, God, I love that talk Bill W. gave the night Dr. Bob died. Well, Bill W. didn't give that talk. Someone who sold tickets for like $20 a piece to have people come hear a one-man show about AA gave that talk. And it's why our literature is so important. Since Carrie talked about autonomy and I'm talking about the concepts, I just want to give, and I won't mention the other person's name because it's not up to me to debate with other people. Carrie mentioned his name, not up to me. But what Carrie should have said is Billy feels what's in the current literature presides, and the other person has decided to make up their own version of what's in writing. And so because we're talking about autonomy, I just want to make sure that I show you where to go. So if you have a current service manual in your hand, the peach one, and you go to page S99, and you go to, which is the original second page of the original conference charter, if you go to the number 3 at the top of that page, the last paragraph, before it was even 75%. But no change to AA tradition itself may be made with less than written consent of 2/3 of all AA groups. So that's where it started. It was not 75% to begin with. It was 2/3. And it says of all the AA groups. Now, if you follow along, just turn the pages a couple and go to Appendix C. That is labeled clearly in big, bold, black letters, current conference charter. So that is the current conference charter that covers our general service structure. Once you are there, please turn one page to S106. The top of the page, which is the end of number 3 again, and I will read it. But no change in Article 12 of the Conference Charter or in the 12 traditions of AA or in the 12 steps of AA may be made with less than the written consent of 3/4 of the AA groups. And I'm going to emphasize the next sentence I read. As described in the resolution adopted by the 1955 Conference and Convention. Now, please turn. Who got kicked out, me or everybody? Just me? Great. So let's go to page S110, because that is the key. And let's read it. And it is understood that neither the 12 traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous nor the warranties of Article 12 of the conference shall ever be changed or amended by the General Service Conference, except by first asking the consent of the registered AA groups of the world, not of North America, of the world. And then I want to read this most important parentheses. This would include all AA groups known to the General Service offices, not office, not our General Service office, plural. This would include all AA groups known to the General Service offices around the world. These groups shall be suitably notified of any proposal for change. So I don't have an opinion that's different than anyone else. I'm simply going with what's in writing. I know other people believe that there is something that supersedes this, that only North America gets to vote on tradition changes, or the US and Canada. But that is not what is in the resolution in 1955. And it is not what's referred to in the current conference charter, which refers to the original resolution. So regarding autonomy, I respect autonomy greatly, but I wanna make clear that when we're talking about autonomy of changing the traditions, based on the current literature, it does not say that only the AA members in the US and Canada have the autonomy to decide to change the traditions. So I want to deread concept 4. I want to just make sure for anybody that has never been to a concept workshop before, most times, and I'll take 5 minutes, most times, and Don P used to say this all the time, most times when you hear people talk about concept 4, they're always talking about the right of a trustee to vote at the General Service Conference, or the right of our staff to participate at the General Service Conference. That's all great. We give wide latitude, even at the trustee committee level and the AA World Services Committee level, to make sure everyone participates. There's no doubt about that. But that's not really what Concept 4 is about. That's kind of a side issue. So because Concept 4 language is complicated, if you have the book open, I want to divide what Dee read into a couple of parts. Throughout our conference structure, we ought to maintain all responsible levels a traditional right of participation, comma, close quote. Please put some kind of line there right in front of the word taking, because that is the key to where we start. That is the first part of what we really have to talk about in Concept 4. So if you've put a line there, we start reading, taking care that each classification or group of our world servants, so we stop right there. At the General Service Conference, there are only 4 classifications of world servants who have a vote. The first one is area delegates, 93 of them. The second is trustee delegates, 21 of them. The third is AA, GSO, and Grapevine staff delegates. There are about 15 of them each year, depending upon if we have any new employees who aren't voting that year, but around 15. And the fourth classification is non-trustee director delegates. There's 3 on the Grapevine and 3 on AA World Services, so 6 of them. So when it says taking care that each classification or group of our world servants, 4 classifications, area delegates, trustees, GSO and Grapevine staff, and directors on the corporate board. And then we continue reading. Shall be allowed a voting representation. So we've already discussed the voting representation. There's 4 classifications. And what is the voting representation? 93 area delegates, 21 trustees, 15 GSOAA Grapevine staff, 6 non-trustee directors. And here is the key wording. A voting representation in reasonable proportion to the responsibility that each must discharge. So what is that reasonable proportion? Well, remember when we talked about the conference charter in Concept 1, Bill and Bob didn't leave AA to the trustees. Left it to the AA groups. That's why their reasonable proportion is triple the size of anyone else. Close to 70% of the voters at the General Service Conference are area delegates. And that is the reasonable proportion that was created. The trustees are the next largest group, and they carry out our world services in between conferences. So they have the second largest reasonable proportion, directly reasonable to the responsibility that they discharge, and then the same for staff and the same for directors. So that's what that concept means. It means that in our general service structure, and in AA groups, we usually, let me clarify myself. In AA groups, in most groups, we don't have this problem because only group members vote. However, we all know there's challenges with that. But only a member of an AA group is supposed to vote at that AA group. But where we run into this responsible proportion or reasonable proportion problem is usually at a district or an area. In other words, is there a reasonable concept for proportion of voting going on at your district or area? So what do I mean by that? Well, we've created lots of voting positions at districts and areas. And we've given lots of people the right to vote at districts and assemblies. And I'm not saying that that's wrong. But what I am saying is, if your assembly is supposed to be a reasonable proportion, like the General Service Conference, shouldn't 70% or more of the voters be GSRs and DCMs at your assembly and not area officers and area committee chairs? I'm not saying they shouldn't have a vote. I'm just saying there should be a reasonable proportion so that your area or district is just like the General Service Conference, that the groups are in fact in charge. The last thing I want to say about concept four is another little known, talked about part of the concepts. And I would say they're applicable to area officers. But on page 18, in the third full paragraph, it says, one argument for taking away the trustee and service worker vote in the conference is this. It is urged that there is danger if we allow service people and trustees to vote on their own past performance, for example, their annual reports. And Bill writes, to a certain extent, this argument is sound, so it's valid. And then what does he say? As a matter of tradition, there is no doubt that the trustees and service workers alike should refrain from voting on reports on their own past activities. So, what's their own past activities? Well, at last year's General Service Conference, there was a motion to censure the General Service Board. It did not leave committee. So it never went to a vote at the full conference floor. But if it did, what was the trustees' plan on voting? Had they all talked together and decided that they were going to follow the guidance of concept four? Because nothing would be more described as your own past activities than a motion to censure you for your activities being out of line. And I've brought this up about the voting to change the traditions and motions to censure on the conference floor. Is shouldn't we agree on the policy beforehand rather than argue when the votes are taking place? Because remember, we're in a weird time in AA history. I'm sure it's always weird in AA history, but I can tell you what's never happened before. In a 2-year period, there has never been two motions to censure the trustees. Not two in 2 years. One on the manuscript in 2018, and 2 years later, another one regarding business practices. Now, both of those did not leave committee. And I fully support the group conscience. I'm thankful for that committee doing that work. But there is an unanswered question out there, per what's in the writing in concept four. Should trustees be voting on the activities of their own actions? According to Bill W., he says, as a matter of tradition, they should step aside and not vote. I mean, I feel so strongly on that. I know that I hear people talk about abstentions in AA. The way I read concept four, if you are elected to hold a position in AA and you abstain from a vote, then you are signifying or signaling the body that you wish to step aside. You were not elected by your group or your area, your district, not to vote. You were elected to be a capable voter to carry out the group conscience. Only if you have a personal conflict or if you're voting on your own reports should you not vote. Otherwise, if you accept the position in AA, you have been elected to participate per concept four, not abstain. Thanks. Look forward to the questions.
Wow. Thank you so much, Billy. And thank you, Carrie, for being here tonight. You guys always seem to raise the bar for me, and I appreciate that. And for those of you in the audience, if you haven't already submitted questions, please do so now. You can either submit them directly to Carrie or to Billy, traditions to Carrie, Billy to for concepts, or myself, if you're nervous and you want to submit them unanimously, protect your anonymity, what have you. All right, let's see what we got. Do you have anything yet, Carrie, since you
got one. Okay, so for Q&A, I attended a new online meeting on Monday. When they read how it works, they did a screen share and had someone read it off of PowerPoint. The PowerPoint wording changed male pronouns to God and altered some of the other parts of how it works. What is the best way to address this or not? Your thoughts? Well, my opinion would be don't go to pop-up Zoom AA meetings. Like, make sure you're going to actual groups. That are connected to AA as a whole, because every newcomer with a Zoom account has their own meeting right now. So there's that. But my more politically correct answer would probably have to be, are you thinking about joining this meeting and making it your home group? And if so, then it's your business and not only your right to say something that about the fact that they are wrong 100%. Because if not, this group has, you don't have anything to do with it, and they have a right to be wrong. And if it's not your home group, it's not your business. Thanks.
Thank you, Carrie. Billy, do you have a question? You're muted, Billy.
Thanks. Is one of the reasons for a home group because each member has the right of decision at one group, one district, one area? Well, one vote, one person. But I could go on a list of why a home group is important. But we definitely vote in one home group. It's directly tied to the seventh tradition. If the long form says that groups of, fully self-supported by the voluntary contributions of their own members, not other members, then that's your backup for your vote. If you don't really like how something's going on, you could put less money in the basket. But if you don't like what's going on in the group, he who pays the piper pays the tune, plays the tune. But yes, one group, one member. I'm sure Carrie wants to comment on that.
No, it was a concept question. I'll stick with the traditions. But yeah, I'll just finish qualifying by saying, yes, I do have a sobriety date. Yes, I do have a home group. And no, I don't hold any service commitments at all in any group that's not my home group, as tempting as that might be, because I'm one among many today. So the next question I have is, what is your group's practice with the feedback to the group inventory? Do you just file them away or do they get discussed? You know, this definitely falls under group autonomy because every group inventory is different and it just depends on who your facilitator is, which please don't ask someone who's a regular attendee or definitely not a home group member to facilitate, get an outside facilitator, right? Another thing that I was taught is, you know, when you, after you read your group, after you write your inventory, which, so my home group is in the middle of our inventory right now. So at the last business meeting, our recording secretary passed out the short form group inventory to all of our members. And all of our members get to go home, take that home, and write inventory and fill that out. Then when we actually go in to do our fifth step, right, with a facilitator, then we get to have an opportunity to each read every question. What we don't do, and I don't know, maybe you guys do, but one of the things that I have seen not work real well is when you use a group inventory as a complaint form. If the person wants to participate, they will show up and participate. They don't get to turn in their inventory. Another thing that, you know, I know that when I did my fifth step, I didn't invite the neighbors and my family to participate in taking my inventory. So I'm not going to invite the meeting's attendees. It's a group inventory. Our friends and family should not be part of that. In my home group, what we do is we will meet with the facilitator. The facilitator will make sure that he or she doesn't know any of the, you know, the bleeding deacon, the elder statesman. They don't know who's who in the group. So everybody's going to be equal. Everybody's going to have an equal 2-minute time slot to read their answer, whatever, right? And then they're going to bring a recorder with them, a person who takes minutes. And that person's going to kind of write our sixth step for us. And then we're going to have another time without a facilitator, without a, you know, where we meet and see what we need to work on. And most of those things that came up under common manifestations are going to go on our agenda for our business meetings. And we're going to take a vote to where if we need to, you know, have a discussion or even to make a motion and change something, then the whole group gets to participate in that discussion. So that's how we do it. But everybody does it different. And I don't know if there's really a right or a wrong way to take inventory. I think that if you're taking inventory, you're on the right path.
I like that. Thank you, Billy. Did you get another concept?
Yeah, I have a couple of questions. Okay, I got a little lost, and I think you addressed it, but what happens at an area assembly if not enough GSRs attend, but all the officers with votes do? So the balance is out where the groups don't have a reasonable majority representation. This happened here in Australia. I think only a few GSRs turned up. It was a controversial vote, and the office holders held more than a reasonable representation versus the groups. Well, I'm not going to go into things about Australia. I'm aware of the voting percentages at their general service conference. And, you know, but this first one about the assembly, I would tell you that we have created assemblies of sheep, unfortunately. And area officers and other leaders use this to their advantage. Especially, I'll just use the AA timeline for you. We send a bunch of new GSRs in January to deal with things that people have been discussing for 6 months and a year. And then we hurry up and make sure that the ones who can speak well, we line up with a service sponsor that can control them. It's not good for AA. Somebody asked a question follow-up, which is connected, which is it reasonable to abstain if you're new and don't know the background on the question? What about people who look around the assembly to see how others are voting so they can vote in the majority? Yeah, these things all happen. As far as being new and showing up and abstaining, I would say that if you're new, you should be in contact with the person who had the job before you. You should be given the proper background. But let's face it, we have a very skewed, unfair information sharing that the area delegates would never put up with if GSO did that to them. The 93 area delegates expect complete transparency from GSO and complete background material. And they expect not to be kept in the dark. And that is awesome. But in many of the 93 areas, there is not that same transparency. There's a different set of rules because people think the GSRs at DCMs, oh, they don't need it, or they won't understand it, or they can't comprehend it. And my experience is the opposite. My experience is the groups can understand it, and the districts can understand it. And the more transparent we are, the better. But to the question about should somebody abstain, unfortunately, if they weren't given all the information they need, then they should abstain for sure. That shouldn't happen, but I am aware that it does. Somebody asked quickly, if I submit a treasurer's report for my home group, should I then not participate in the vote? Based on how I read concept four, yes, you should not vote. That's your report. You're asking the body to approve it. That's how I read concept four. You do not vote on the reports of your own actions. Thanks.
All right, so the next question for autonomy is, my group took a vote to keep reading the old preamble with the old language rather than the recent new language. Is that in keeping with the spirit of the interpretation of tradition four? Nope. I guess I'll elaborate. Your group has a right to be wrong. For example, my home group, we unanimously voted not to change the preamble. We unanimously voted not to change the literature. We felt very strongly about that. We also feel very strongly that God is the one ultimate authority, and how he may express himself is throughout the group conscience of the United States and Canada, expressed through the conference. And that's the way our service structure is set up. So we don't have a right to say, hey, God, I hear you. I understand what happened at the conference this year, but we think we know better. So we're going to go ahead and change it to our liking. So I'll be real honest, and I hope that this isn't too controversial, but our group's GSR knew that this was going to happen 2.5 years ago. And because our group isn't for changing the literature, we haven't been using that preamble. We don't want to be in a meeting where it's divided. That preamble is not, I don't know if you guys know this, that preamble was written by like a grapevine editor for non-alcoholics. It's not even for us. Have you ever actually listened to the preamble that you guys are reading? Because my group doesn't read this. But the preamble that you guys are reading in your groups, which is totally an autonomous reading, and you don't have to read this preamble that talks to the non-alcoholic observer in the outside world, which is why it was written, says, it doesn't say we are a fellowship of people, men and women, whatever. It doesn't say we are a fellowship. It says Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope, not ours. It's not written for us or by us. Strength and hope with each other so that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. This preamble isn't even for us. So I don't know why we're getting all bent out of shape about it, but I've been in meetings lately. This is so divisive. I've been in meetings lately where the person who's asked to read the preamble will read it like this. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience. And then I've been in meetings lately where they go, Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share that. And it's like, come on, guys. Like, we don't want that kind of controversy in our group. We wanted to avoid it from the get-go. I could see this coming on 3 years ago. So we stopped saying the preamble. We read what is AA. And it's a reading that comes directly from conference-approved literature, not from the grapevine. And it's a compilation of the traditions and what is AA. And kind of like, you know, the preamble isn't for us. It doesn't have anything about the steps, the big book, God, nothing. It's for the outside world. It's to be, you know, it was published in the grapevine so that we could start using grapevines as a way of carrying the AA message to doctor's offices and to, you know, judicial systems and yada, yada, yada. And then we started using it in our open speaker meetings, which that's what open meetings should be, speaker meetings, and to let friends and family know what we are. But it's not for us. So why the big deal about the preamble? I just don't get it. Please send, okay. Then I have a few more, but I'll let Billy take a turn.
I'll get some quick ones out of the way. At the North American Canada General Service Conference, do trustees and GSO staff get a vote on delegate conference committees? That is a no. That is a big no. They only get a vote on the conference floor. The conference committee is made up only of area delegates. A staff member participates as the secretary, but with no vote, and is not supposed to be given opinions, is only supposed to be helping getting information. So for whoever asked that question, no, they do not sit on conference committees. Why do some past delegates treat area assembly members with so much less respect than they would expect as a delegate and instead try to control and manipulate the assembly using newcomers? If I could answer that question, I don't know. Maybe I could figure out the lottery numbers tonight. All I could share with you is a man I respect a lot told me a long time ago when I became a past delegate. He said, Billy, I've always been proud of being a delegate, but I'm not really proud of being a past delegate. And I said, what do you mean by that? And he said, just the dominating control at assemblies by past delegates. The kind of non-rotation that it seems to send a message of, there's not really rotation. And listen, I've been to the last four of my state assemblies and I haven't spoke at the microphone once. I've felt obviously strongly about a couple of things, but I've been taught to only go to the microphone as a past delegate if I'm called on by the chair because they think I might have institutional knowledge that could help the voters, or if I think a grave, grave issue is happening. But I can tell you, in my home state, 40% of the conversation is past delegates, and all it does is cause divisiveness. Let's see, next question. I was at my first area assembly a few days ago. Someone made a motion to allocate more money to the delegate into the budget for next year. A vote took place within 5 minutes and passed. I was only there as an alternate GSR, and I would have spoken up and said, no, I believe I have to go back to my group and see what their conscience is and come back at the next assembly. Here's what I would say to the person who asked that question. We have to give GSRs the right to dispose of a lot of things. We can't come back to the group every single time for every single issue. As Dr. Bob said about what anonymity, he said protecting your anonymity, overprotecting it, is just as much a violation of Tradition 11 as breaking it. Well, so is keeping going back to the groups, not embracing the right of decision. So GSR should be able to handle 90% of the things that are coming to them. That's why your group elects that good person to do that job. Now, 10, 15%, yes, it might be a major thing that should go back to the groups. But we have to, at some point, really embrace the right of decision. That's it, Dee.
Thank you. Carrie, you got more?
A ton. What do you want me to do? Some of them are super quick.
Well, you guys, Billy, do you have a few moments? You guys got a few moments to wrap it up?
Yeah, you can go.
Okay. A delegate told an AA group that they can change words in the steps or traditions as long as they don't publish it outside of that group. What is the delegate relying on? Either misinformation, arrogance, or ignorance, I would say. Billy, do you have a different thing that they might be relying on?
No, I mean, as you know, I do, I believe that you got to honor the current literature. But if you look at assemblies in service the last 2 years, delegates have embraced people changing the literature before the conference even changed it. And no, that's not true. It's just simply not true. The fourth tradition is for local issues.
Okay, so
No, go ahead.
Okay, so can I ask you a tradition 12 question, or do we need to stick with four? Because we're not on 12 yet, I'm going to go ahead and say, let's stick with four tonight. Why not do service in other groups outside of your home group? Oh, I didn't say that. I do service in other groups outside of my home group. I don't hold a service commitment in groups outside of my home group. So the difference is a group needs to elect a group officer from the home group. Why? We'll get into that on tradition 7, but the long form of tradition 7, the first line reads, each AA group ought to be fully supported by the voluntary contributions of their own members. And if a group can't support itself, then the group needs to fold. If a group is, and so I guess how I would say that is, like, if you come over to my house for dinner, you're going to eat what I serve. You're not going to go, I don't want pizza. I was hoping for spaghetti, or I don't want spaghetti. I was hoping for steak. It's like, you know what? This is our format. Sorry, you can eat here, or there's the door, right? Like, that's my family autonomy. But you're going to eat what you're served. And then after, you might help me put away a couple of dishes. You might help me clean the table, clear the table off. That's fine. I might help a group put away some chairs. I might help brew some coffee. But at the end of the night, as you're leaving my house, I'm not going to say, oh, wait, hey, before you go, could you please go and vacuum my office and make the bed in my guest room? Because no, that's not your job. The group has to, my household has our own chores. So the elected trusted servants need to be part of the group. But I can do service in other, I just don't hold a service commitment because that's for my home group. And everything I'm giving to another group is stealing from my home group. So how does one handle the minority old members who get voted down that doesn't follow the new format? Every group is autonomous. You got to handle the minority old timers or newcomers the way the group, decides to handle that. There is a place in, I think it's page, in the group pamphlet that talks about the old timers. This, I think it says stubborn old timers or something. I will get that information, hang on. So you are saying the preamble is not conference approved? No, preamble is finally conference approved as of April of this year. It was just grapevine before. It was just grapevine literature. And contrary to popular belief, the grapevine articles are not conference approved, or else I would be conference approved 24 times. And believe me, nothing I write needs to be conference approved. It's just one member's opinion when somebody publishes through the grapevine. The grapevine itself is approved by the conference. The articles are not conference approved literature because they don't go through the same lengthy and painstaking process where at every stage of development, members from all over the United States and Canada get to weigh in on the publishing, if that makes sense. How does someone handle the minority? Okay, that's our country, our county has not taken a group conscience inventory since 1994. Is this GSB responsibility? I'm gonna go ahead and say that one might have to be for Billy because I don't even have counties in Oregon. We have districts and areas only.
Well, in certain parts of the country, depending on the area, sometimes the county has a bunch of districts in it and there might be a DCMC who's the county chair But I think it's safe to say that any general service entity, any AA member, any district, any assembly, any intergroup that does not regularly take inventory suffers the same problems the Big Book talks about every business needing to take regular inventory. So regardless of whether it's a county, a state, a zone, or whatever, it's a good practice to take regular inventory.
Another one is, and I love this one. So down here in South Florida, I personally heard a reliable source who was present when Tom Y, Grapevine editor, in 1947, needed a definition of AA for the post office to recognize AA's in nonprofit, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, like the Grapevine was written for multiple purposes for the not for the outside world, for things like a post office, doctor's offices. That's what it was for. I mean, the fellowship is definitely ran with it. Like the most annoying thing, a pet peeve of mine, is when we're in a closed meeting and they read the preamble. It's like, what? Who in this closed meeting is a non-alcoholic observer? Like, we should know what AA is. We're here. But that's why, you know, that's why most of the time we read how it works. That's for the AA member. Is there a standard or recommended frequency for groups to do an inventory? No, I would recommend once every 2 years. Some groups do it every April, because guess what? Fourth month out of the fourth, you know, the fourth tradition, fourth step, number four is inventory month. Thank you for your sharing. Post office report. Okay, go back to you, Billy, if you have any. What were you looking for?
Yeah, I have one. Let's see. Hold on. Oh, yeah, here you go. How important is the time given to discuss an issue and hold an election or a vote as compared to the reasonable proportion? That's an awesome question. A great question. If you follow the informed group conscience laid out in the AA group pamphlet, it says discussion is more important than voting. That we should take the proper time. And I'll tell you a little story. And this, I love all this controversy about the preamble and the Big Book for a lot of reasons. I love it because a lot of groups that want to complain that didn't have a GSR now need to have a GSR. So I love it for that reason. But I'll also tell a little story about where I feel the board deceived the AA groups this year. And it breaks my heart a little bit. In 2008, there was a controversy because the general manager was serving more than 7 years. And if you don't know this, when we hire a new general manager, we ask that they only serve for 7 years. We do not want anyone becoming the face of AA forever. There was a big, big split in AA and on the boards between people in favor of the general manager still staying and people wanting him to go and blah, blah, blah. In 2008 and 2009, the General Service Conference debated late into the night, after midnight some nights. And in 2011 and 12, the feedback was so strong from the delegates that the board needed to take a look at the agenda of the General Service Conference and needed to say, okay, we hear you. No more late night sessions. No more keeping people up to midnight or after and keeping them hungry and having them vote on major significant AA policy. And changes were instituted to make the voting process better. So when we talk about the preamble this year, that didn't even make it out of the committee. It did not make it out of the Grapevine committee. That was a rushed floor action at 1:30 in the morning. And for me, the quality in which we hold our votes and discussions should be the highest caliber for the AA groups. And I'm a person who's been fully supportive of the virtual general service conferences for 2 years now, totally in awe of what the delegates were able to get done. But yes, errors were made, and I'll just give you a quick example. I deal with large buildings. If you take a large, if you have a building that's not built right, and you ask the person who built it to look at it and tell you what's wrong with it, they will tell you it's the greatest building ever built. You can't talk to any of the 93 delegates or any of the voters who are there this year, because they think they were doing the best for AA in the middle of the night, rushing a vote on a floor action on something that didn't even come out of committee. So the person who asked that question, yes, the quality of our discussions and the way we hold our debates is just as important as the reasonable proportion, for sure. Thanks.
Beautiful. Thank you. How about you? Are you
both fine? I got one more. At the post-conference report, our delegate told us it was okay to use the old preamble. Was that wrong? No, you can use whatever you want. Every group has a right to be wrong. You can use the Bible. You can use the Book of Satan. It just might not create unity as much as it could create disunity and division. If it's called the preamble, we don't have multiple. If you want to write your own preamble, amazing. That's group autonomy. I encourage every group to write their own preamble with group conscience. And, you know, you can even say, we of Alcoholics Anonymous, you can even write it to the newcomer. You can even include the steps or the big book. But that's up to your group. But if we start changing what the conference approved literature is, then we're not going to have a consistent message. Thanks.
Okay, and before we go, I just want to say you both have referenced that group conscience and the definition of that being on page 28 of the AA group pamphlet is for most people that don't really understand what a group conscience is. I think you were talking about the old, you know, the old timer, the dominant opinion, right? I mean, and then Billy talked about studying information. So it's in there. So I encourage everybody to look at page 28 of the AA group pamphlet and look to see what is an informed AA group conscience. So thank you both for being here this evening. We'll go ahead and close with the responsibility statement. I am responsible when anyone, anywhere reaches out for help. I want the hand of AA always to be there. And for that, I am responsible. I think